Should we get going? All right. So it's noon. I don't know if that means I should say good morning or good afternoon, because we're right there at the transition point. But I'd like to thank you for your interest in the Internet Explorer F12 developer tools. I hope by now you've had a chance to see some of the previous talks where they've shown the new functionality in Internet Explorer. Maybe you saw F12 in the keynote. I think that if you haven't, really, go take a look at what's in IE11. We've made just some phenomenal improvements just across the whole platform. And I think that when you look at that in the context of the last several releases, what you'll see is just this huge improvement in security features, like for protecting your content as well as for the end user, a huge amount of performance improvements in graphics, and then all the standards. Really expanding the number of HTML5 modules that we support, for the modules that we have, the depth of support, as well as the quality that's in there, the addition of huge numbers of test suites, so that when browsers claim that they support a particular module, that actually translates into predictable behavior, right? And so partial support actually has a meaning. So with all of that investment, what we've come to, and again, a lot of this, I'm telling you things you probably already know because you're here. We're getting to a place now where the intersection of capabilities across the different browsers and the amount of capabilities in the web platform are enabling new kinds of applications, new kinds of user experiences that really weren't possible previously. And that's just really exciting. I mean, the kind of graphics things that we can start weaving in, this really is going to change the way that people interact with web content. So that's both a good and a bad thing. The fact that with great power kind of comes added complexity means that the things that we're building are now harder to author, harder to debug, and possibly maintain. And so the web developer's job hasn't gotten any easier by having all of this extra power handed to them. Right? And in fact, their job wasn't easy to begin with. Right? The engineering for web-based applications, again, you probably know this really well, It was so hard. You start with an architecture that's client and server. On each side, you've got all kinds of frameworks and libraries that are layered on top of each other. You've got different browsers down on the client side. You've got different hardware running those browsers, each with its own set of capabilities and performance requirements. For each one of the browsers, you have different cycles and cadences of updating. You've got different levels of standard supports, and they've all got bugs. You start putting all this together, along with the fact that the standards themselves are evolving, and it makes the testing of your application really hard, deployment and scaling really hard. I mean, it's a very difficult engineering space to be in to begin with. So at Microsoft, we recognize that. And a lot of the talks that you saw, especially in the keynote today, you realize that there's this whole spectrum in that life cycle, and at each stage, there's different tools that are appropriate. And you've seen that a lot of the server-side tools have been improved, like for the authoring of the initial content. We saw a number of demos around that. For scalability and how things are deployed, we've seen tools around that. So when we're coming here from Internet Explorer, what we find is we're down on the client. We're running down on some device. You're almost doing client-side debugging of how does your content behave and is interpreted and being run by this browser on this machine. And so what we recognized was that we needed a tool sort of for that slice of the life cycle. So coming here with IE11, the Internet Explorer team partnered with Visual Studio, and we looked at that whole spectrum, and we looked at where there were existing tools. We looked at where there were particular tasks that the developers needed to do that cut across potential stages. We looked at places where web developers were spending a huge amount of time and where they really needed information exposed from the underlying platform in order to make decisions about is their app working right or is there a bug in the platform they need to work around, how is the performance of their app behaving, is there some tuning that they need to do, and looking at all those different kind of characteristics. And so, I better actually use my slides, huh? Is it? Uh-oh, they went away. All right, there we go. So we looked at where people were spending large amounts of time. We looked at what those tasks were, especially the tasks where the platform characteristics made a big difference, right? In terms of, like, say, memory management. Where is it that the browser is allocating the memory? How expensive are those objects? And then you can start looking at the characteristics of your application and how it's allocating and how it's maintaining memory. Okay, so what we then realized was that the tools that we had previously weren't really up to the new demands that the complexity of the current web platform was enabling. And so we sat down and we actually redesigned and re-implemented those tools from scratch. The tools were implemented in TypeScript, and we actually were able to use our F12 to debug F12, right? So we're kind of circular in that reference. But we came up with a sort of tools designed specifically around the tasks that the web developers needed to do. Now, I would suggest that in some ways, let's use an analogy, that the platform without the tools is kind of like a road without vehicles, right? So a road will get you where you want to go. But if you don't have a vehicle, it's a really long, manual, labor-intensive process, right? It's notepad plus alerts, okay? It's going to leave you exhausted when you get to the end. But the tools are going to actually allow you to travel that road much faster and allow you to focus your energy on the things that are unique to your application, right? And tools like vehicles, some are special purpose. They do one thing really well, really fast. Maybe they're, say a motorcycle, right? Or if they're more general purpose, they do a little bit of everything, but nothing really well, right? Like a minivan. So for us, what we were looking at was what was the purpose? What was the task that the web developer needed to do? And then the tools were implemented specifically to support that. All right, let me see, where am I? So today, that's got a real delay. Back. Okay, so today I get the pleasure of kind of introducing you to these new tools. It's just a high-level meet and greet. We're going to go through a scenario and look at how the tools work. There's a number of talks that drill down very deep into the specific tools and some of the really interesting and capabilities and some of the subtleties about how to use them. But today's really about an overview. So let me bring out actually the star of the show, and we'll spend our time talking about the tools. Now, what we have is a fairly simple application. It's a kind of a bartender's guide for drinks. It's been implemented. Switch. There we go. It was simply implemented as an ASP application. It has a simple, I might as well stay over here. I have to put on my old man eyes. Okay. It's just an XML data file that is bound to a series of templates using jQuery and handlebars. All right, and then we build that out, and it generates our nice application. And then here, you can click on a drink, and it shows information about that drink and how to make it. All right. So this is what we're going to be debugging here and see what's going on. Now, I built this out. It works on different browsers. I generated the content. And when I bring it up, it just doesn't look right polished. It's not the way. So again, I'm kind of walking through the process. First thing we see is I'd like to be able to debug and modify what's going on. So I don't like that header. So I'm just going to come down here and bring up Inspect Element, which immediately brings up the new tools. And I'll make them nice and big so we can see them. Again, the different tools, kind of as you would walk through them, come down the left. This is our DOM Explorer. And you can see immediately that we have all the data. As we highlight over and move around, we can see that there's these grid lines showing up top. So let's see what's going on with those guys. So let me grab this guy and go over and look at layout for a second. All right. And so what I can see is that for that input that was sitting up there on the search box, it actually has all the information around its positioning, the margins, the borders, padding, and all this, what's going on there. Let me just change those things for a second. Let me give 20 pixels at the top. Let me give myself a big border, see if that works. All right, and then let's just go to and do some padding in here as well. Where am I? Whoops. Okay. And now, as I highlight over it, you can see that the grid lines and the coloring actually matches the coloring in the layout, and you can see exactly where the margin borders and padding sizes are as you hover over the element. So it gives you a really good visual indication of what's going on. If I don't want to see that, I can just hide it. Whoops, hide it. All right. Now, I didn't like the cocktails up there. So I can select the head. And I know that I've got a class. So I'm going to add an attribute down here and just give it a class. And I can't remember. Let's see. There's all of my classes header. All right. So immediately, you can see, well, that we have the updated, it's moved out, the search has moved over here. We actually had a home and a search icon that had been hidden. Right? Immediately, everything just is live. I didn't have to refresh. What I'm seeing up here is reflected when I changed the 20 over in the layout pane. Everything reflected live. Right? And so I'm able to very quickly kind of come in and see what's going on. Okay. So the other thing that we can do is I don't like where that is, where the home button is. So I'm going to grab the home button. I'm going to bring that down and move it over. I want to go back to my input. I don't like the way he is. And I'm going to go back to what we had. I think I'll just make it all zeros. That way he's just sitting there. All right. There we go. So very quickly I'm able to do that. And I like the way that is. So I'm just going to do a quick copy. I'm going to come back over here. And I'm going to save that. All right, so that just happens to be this section here. I'm just going to replace it. I'm just doing this real fast. And you can see it comes over, and it's got all the same stuff. The class header is there. The styles are back to the way they're supposed to be. I'll save it. And if I really want, I can regenerate, but I don't need to do that just yet. All right, so we saw that. We saw styles. Let's look at this. I don't like these guys. So let me select this. Ah, there he is. And I can see down here across the bottom that not only does it give me the element, but it gives me the branch all the way back up, so I'm able to kind of keep track of where the containers are around him, as well as where the margins and paddings are. As I come into the styles, let's look at this one for a second. What we can see is that there's a bunch of different tabs. One's the styles, which is where the styles that apply to this element. I've got no inline, I'm inheriting an anchor under a title in my cocktail summary. The green is coming from there, I can turn it off. And I can see that he changes color. All right, well, where did that color come from? All right, well, now I'm red, and you can see that I've actually turned off my green. He's inheriting his red from a title. If I don't like that, I can probably get... Oh, now I don't have anything, because these guys are overwriting themselves. Let's turn this guy. Is he going to turn on? Nope. Oh, got to do it here. Oh, and then computed. So again, computed is just showing me where they're all coming from. But I want to go back to styles. I don't want him to be green, and I do want this. So I want a different color. There we go. I think there's one. No, not that one. Let's do pale. You can notice there's IntelliSense coming up for the properties that I want. Ooh, I wonder what medium purple will look like. So if I select that, notice I get the highlights here. So as I'm looking at the trace, will it do it? There it goes. I can see what the colors were moving up. And I'm able to see what's going on, layout. If I had any events, they'd be listed there. And all right. So what did I forget? Edit DOM, we changed the page. OK. Then what I want to do is switch over to the console. Now, the console is actually going to be the same across everything. Again, we have full IntelliSense. If I want to look at, let's say, the body, he can come up, and I have an HTML view on there, so I can just expand that and walk through it just like I did in the DOM Explorer. If instead I want to treat this as script, I'm able to evaluate as object. Now I've got to scroll down. There he is. So there's the object, and he looks just like he would if I was dealing with him in script. Again, this is a live console, so I can change anything. Like you can see I have full IntelliSense on what's there. I have a page title, inner text, plus equals a bartender's guide. Uh-oh, syntax. Sorry, I was not looking. Stop. Come back. Inner test. Hey, it worked. And I need to collapse this up. No, not return. Delete. I'm trying to get... There we go. And that light up. So let's get back to here. Let's bring up the console. So you can see that the console here is the same as what we just had, so there's a permanence to what's going on. Also, I got to get back to that guy. Let's reselect him so he scrolls into view. You can see that he updated here, right? And I can even come back, and if I make a change, part two, right? We see that he updated here as well as here, so everything is live and working. We've got all kinds of different ways of looking at the objects, and it's persistent across the different tabs. All right. So let's keep going. Okay, I don't want the console here. So as I'm looking at my page, and I see that there's a search button here that I might want to play with. Yeah, let me put this guy, make him smaller so we can see what's going on. As I start typing here, I notice that it's filtering the drinks, but as I look for something like Midori, there's no drinks at all. And I know that some of these drinks have Midori in it, so I need to figure out what's going on. Right, so I got my page kind of looking a little bit better. I'll go update the styles in a minute when I go back and rebuild. But I want to make the page look or behave the way it is. So in the search, localhost, I'll come in cocktails. Let me look for search text. This is, I know that, oh, hey, that doesn't look very good down there. Here, let me hit pretty print. There, that's better. So I can get that. Yeah, it'll do it. So, and that worked out. That actually got all the right line numbers. Let me keep going. Let me find out where that guy is. All right. Home Adamant Listener. Filters. Okay. Let's put... Ah! Okay, so we can see here that we, when it changes, we're calling the summary filter function, right, in order to figure out which elements to show. So I can put a breakpoint there and come back up. All right, notice that a couple things right off the top. We didn't undock, right? We're still here. We're still docked, and we're able to debug. And also, I didn't have to refresh the page. Right? So I was just able to immediately switch into debug mode. This guy is looking for the filter function, which happens to be down here at the bottom. So let me just put a breakpoint in there. You can see down the scroll bar here that the search items are actually highlighted in blue, so I get some orientation around what's going on in the file. The breakpoints are in red. Over here, we can see the call stack for where I broke, and I can actually... it's going off. I can actually highlight and see the piece of script that it was going to, and I can click to go there. For breakpoints, we can actually go in and make them conditional, disable them all. We have full control over that. I've got my watch windows. So up here, we have locals automatically showing me what I'm going to have. And then I can come over here and highlight. And as I highlight over things, I can see what the objects are. Right? And I can go in and expand them out. Right? So I have nice hover inspection. For keywords, I'm going to add a watch because whatever I was typing up here, it kind of came in, and I want to see what's going on here. So let's step through this. Come on. All right, so where'd my watch? There he is. Keywords undefined. We'll step over. All right, you can see, oh, look, there's Midori right there. So all this is doing is for each one of the cocktails that I have is walking through them. It turns out the very first cocktail had Midori in it. So I don't have to go through many of them. All right, so my keywords is there for Midori. I'll just keep going because we found it. We made him too lowercase. Now we go get the title of the drink. Fine, we make him too lowercase, and then we're going to check for the index of. All right, now, keywords, I can see over here, it has a Midori in it, and that didn't go lowercase. All right, so I don't understand why, in this case, the fade-in is proper, but that should have been lowercase. So let me go see what happened. Why didn't two lowercase work? There it is. It's 1 ounce Midori melon liqueur. Ah, that one is lowercase. What's going on? Oh, my dyslexia kicked in. All right, so that's key rods, not keywords. All right, so I can fix that. Then everything's worked. So let me just switch over here really fast, make that change now that I found it. Go to cocktails.js. There he is. Keywords, and then I will come back. Okay, and then we'll just go and refresh. Hello. I think he did it. And go. Hang on. Breakpoints. Turn them off. All right, that way I can refresh. Boy, that took a long time. All right, we'll go look at that in a minute. All right, so now I come up here, and as I look for Midori, I can properly see that that is working the way I expected it to. Yay, all right. And there's similarly, I can look for other things, and I'm finding my vodka drinks immediately. And if I look for, let's say, capitalized on the gin, well, there's a lot of gin drinks. Let's look for vodka again. Even if it's all capitalized, everything seems to be working the way I want it to. Okay, so I was able to go through the debugger. I was able to add watches just really quickly. I got my breakpoints in there and all working. Network, okay, so the network inspector, this one is kind of what we've expected to see. If I wanted to see where what the timings are and what gets loaded and how much time is spent in there, I can. I have a nice initiator column so I can see what images were downloaded and how long it took. All right, that's all useful. All right, now I'm happy with that. We had a lot of time that was spent in the very beginning. Ooh, so what's this? Okay, let's go back. Let me hit refresh. I want to find out why that page took so long to load. Okay, it's analyzing, all right. And this is just my Surface Pro, right? I've got Visual Studio and IE and everything. It's just running here, nice and happy. So let's see what happened here. So the first thing we see is I hit refresh. There was a bunch of work that happened. You can see that the visual throughput is listed right here, so we had some frame rate differences. But up here, we can see there's actual marks. So the life cycle, if you will, of it going through IE are actually automatically marked up here. So we know when DOM content loaded happened, we know where the load, the onload happened, we see a bunch of work. We can see the color coding here. I wonder if I can make it. There we go. Okay, so we can see that the colors here actually correspond to the subsystems that are going on. So we can see where there was actual image decoding. Let me put it back. Okay, we can see where there was actual image decoding going on versus scripting. So let's see what happened in the loading case, just really quick, because I just want to zoom in. All right, and then I want to get rid of the visual throughput and then come down here. All right, so it was a huge amount of HTML parsing that happened. Let's go down into him, see what's going on. All right, script evaluation. So we can see that we're parsing, we have how much time was spent. It was on the UI thread. We had a script evaluation here. Let me give ourselves a little room. All right, so this is a script URL for MooTools. I can actually look at what the code was that was being executed just by hovering over. And I see that it took me 61 milliseconds. This one, okay, that's expected. There's jQuery. I know I needed that. And I can keep going down. But MooTools, I don't recall using MooTools. Right? All I used was jQuery and handlebars. So let me go back and look at where that came from. Oh, look, MooTools, jQuery, handlebars. You know what? I didn't even use MooTools. So let me get rid of him. All right, because I'm sure I don't need that. And let's go back here, and let me just reload, and we'll see what happens. Oh, whoops, I should hit this to take a new. All right, so I'm taking a new one. Let me hit refresh, stop. It's analyzing. We should be able to see that. All right, DOM content loaded. Well, that looks smaller. So let's go back, let's drill in, see what happened up to the point where we are loading content, and wow. Okay, HTML parsing, we'll expand him out. This script evaluation is, I need more space. Here, let's get more space. We'll collapse down these two guys because I'm not looking at them. And there we go, straight to jQuery. So all that time was recovered and we can just verify that really fast. All right, but I wasn't happy with my load times, so let's go back up and look again. And let me zoom back out. All right, so we had our load, oops. All right, so let's look at this time, which is what happened after we got DOM content loaded. And we can see here that there was a whole bunch of this image decoding that happened, which would make sense because I have a lot of images. And we can see that our rendering didn't happen until way over here. So we have something going on throughout the length, and it looks periodic, right? It looks like we've got some loading, scripting, decoding, loading, scripting, decoding. Right, using up all of our CPU. So there's something definitely going on. So let's just grab a bunch of them. I'll just zoom in again. And let's go down and see if we can figure out what it was doing that took so much time. All right, so I don't care about image decoding. DOM event ready state. So let's expand to him. All right. And we see, where'd it go? event listener. Okay, so it was a source location, it was jQuery. I can click there to go straight to it, but I want to scroll down and find out where all this time was spent. All right, well, it looks like this bar is getting bigger and bigger. All this set inner HTML, and it's getting bigger every time. All right, so that can't be good. It looks like we had a set inner HTML done on a div, which was my cocktail summary container. Okay, well, you know, there's definitely something not real happy here. And you can see that the set inner HTML caused HTML parsing to happen, followed by a style calculation. And we can actually see which elements, let me see if I make this guy bigger, we can actually see which elements were being recomputed. And it looks like, given that it's taking longer and longer every time, that we've got kind of an n squared style recalculation followed by relayout happening. Okay, so that's set inner HTML. Let's figure out where that guy is. Okay, so I'll just come up here and I'll find inner HTML. There he is, cocktail decals container. So, there he is. Add cocktail, setting the inner HTML. Okay, this looks like the one I want, right? From the div that was being changed, it was a summary container inside. All right, so I have add cocktail, and I know that add cocktail is being called from here. Okay, so we are data for each as we're walking through our XML, where it's adding cocktail. Okay, pretty straightforward, right? We're just processing the sort of the XHR feedback that data objects that came in. We're adding them, and each one calls inner HTML. But I happen to know that inner HTML is expensive, right, relatively, because we have to start the parser. We're going to have to tear down whatever markup was under the element to begin with. Then we're going to parse through all this content, put it in. That causes a cascade of styles. Okay, so what I'm going to do, and because I already proved to you I can't type, what I'm going to do here is I'm going to take this guy and comment him out. And instead, I'm going to take, here, I'll show you exactly what I'm doing. So all this function was doing was calling summary template data, right, which is what's generating the HTML and assigning it in. So I'm going to call summary template data on cocktail summary directly, and I'm just going to build up a string. Right? And then what I'll do is I'll call the inner HTML as a single batch operation. Right? And inner HTML, HTML combined, I build it up, I do it outside the for each. I now don't call add cocktail at all. All right. So now we'll just go back and I'll do the same thing. Let's come up here. Oh, and how much time was spent? Where were we? Let's go back up to this guy. So that was 618 milliseconds. All right, so let's start a new profile, hit refresh. He's back, hit stop. 30 minutes, okay. Wow, where'd all my time go? All right, let's go drill into there. Okay. That is a whole lot faster. So, where'd he go? Up, 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 up. There he is. 61 milliseconds. So, what's that? 10%? Right, so we went from 618 down to 61 milliseconds. Right, so now my load time is looking a lot better. So I just took advantage of the fact that I could run the parser and kind of rip through all the elements really fast without doing all of the parser setup and teardown and markup manipulations. Right, and so that let me very quickly get back and forth to where I want to go. All right, so as I come down, I'm pretty happy with this. We can even, let's say, what's the next guy? Script profiling. All right, this is one that we're kind of used to seeing. I can come in here and say, all right, let's profile and see what happened if I look for vodka. All right, and then I can come down here and stop. All right, and count inclusive time, exclusive time. All right, so where do we spend all of our time? Oops, scroll up to the top. Function apply, handle, dispatch. line number, the URL for what we're dealing with. So the script profiler tells us what the script spent its time doing, but the UI responsiveness is telling us what was the subsystem behavior for that. All right, so we can look for first the script, where the script's spending time, and then why did the script spend so much time. In this case, we were able to see the subsystems. All right, let's go to memory. All right, so memory, we can take a snapshot. And if I'm doing things over time, then as he changes, I can see there's little upticks in memory, but mostly we're just hiding and showing stuff that's already there, so there's no real memory change. But let me see where I'm spending memory. So I take a snapshot. In this case, the snapshot is also taking a screen. We have 9 megs of memory, 2,400 objects. We have a screenshot of what's going on. The memory profiler is still running. So I can come up here maybe and go back and look for, let's do Midori again. All right, and then we can take another snapshot. All right, and we can see that that snapshot was taken visually at a different point in time. And just I'll just stop the snapshot so we can go look at what we can learn. So I'll come in here and say, all right, there's all these objects, and I can see that I had 722 function objects in here coming from various different places. If I wanted to look at retained size, make him go that way, then I can see what is, if that object wasn't there, how much space would I recover? All right, and this is and I'm looking right now at snapshot one and the types. If I go to dominators, right, I can see that my global object space was about 9 megs. If I look for individual objects, I can see that, this one image was 7 megs. All right, the next thing down is a script block, and then I have my other images that look like they've got data URI. Here's a cocktail PNG, that's only 162. Wow, so it looks like about 9 megs of my memory, or 7 of my 9 megs is actually one image. Well, I didn't expect to see that. All right, we'll go back and fix that here in a second. And then we can, we'll fix that. Since I'm here, cocktails, that image, we know what it was, UV image, so I could have just searched into my XML file and I found it here. Oh, looks, it's a leftover editing turd where I was marking things down, but it didn't remove the old one. So I'll save him. All right, let's go back. And let's see what happens. So that was telling me, where the memory is being spent. The retained size was, if I could get rid of something, how much would I save by looking at him? We can drill down in to find out, in this case, these objects are a number of sub ones, and we're able to see that each one isn't very big. All right, and then for roots, if we're actually looking for closures, we can actually follow where the objects have references on them. This particular example is very simple, and there is not very little script, so we don't have any massive allocations and data structures. There is some talks later that drill down into the memory tools a lot deeper and actually show how to use this to debug closures and memory accumulations that may build up. But let's go back, because I took 2 snapshots. So here, what we can see from our baseline is that just by doing the filtering, our memory changed a little bit, but not a whole lot. And our objects didn't change a whole lot, but we had one new object. What was it? Oh, Navigator. So in this case, the handlebars was actually using a navigation event in order to switch to the other object. But there we go. So that was actually fairly fast. And that actually validates what we saw in the summary, where going back and forth and filtering these guys, showing them and hiding them, we were basically in a steady state. So that's kind of working the way it was. I was able to find an expensive piece of memory. So let me hit refresh. All right, and let's look at memory now. And I'll just take a snapshot since we're all loaded. And then, I'm only at 3 megs instead of 9. And with that image gone, I'm able to validate that my memory is working so much faster. All right, that is excellent. So what's the last tab here? The last one that I've got in this pane is emulation. So this gets to the idea that on your client devices, we have so many different behaviors. And what we're getting ourselves set up to be able to do is look at, if I have media rules, right, for orientation. Can I drive it and change it here? If we're dealing with different devices at different sizes and different resolutions, can I change this and see how my page responds? Can I be able to move back and forth? If we're dealing with GPS, right, can I do a GPS emulation and start driving the behavior of my app? Let's say it's a mapping app and I want to find, you know, local points of interest, right? We're able to get in there and drive that. Similarly, we can change the user agent string. Lots of people love being able to do that, right? Be able to check, you know, what does the content that comes down from the servers look like. For the browser profile, right, we have two primary ones, which is the desktop and the phone. We switch to phone, and it puts us into essentially the same behavior that you would see from IE on the phone. There are some key differences, things like text scaling and the way the viewport management works that will kick in here. And I don't want to get into all of that right now. And then for document modes, we've actually simplified this tremendously, so there's no more browser mode plus document mode. That was confusing to everybody, and it wasn't clear what you were actually switching into. In this case, the real focus looking forward is how do you take content you've already developed and move it into edge mode, right? And actually take advantage of the current standards and behavior support in IE. And so the debugging that this is really leading you towards is exactly that. All right. Oops, I'm not connected. Okay, don't look behind the curtain. So this I here for document mode is brings us to modern IE. And if you haven't taken a look at modern IE, I highly recommend it. There's all kinds of tools there that can lead you towards things like browser stack and being able to test across multiple differences of the browser. There's some site auditing tools that are up there that will actually go through your content and look for things that are maybe IE-isms that would cause compatibility problems if it was brought up into edge mode. And there's just a lot of section for community engagement and talking of content, or talking about things they find. All right, and then there's going to be a bunch of stuff that we bring out there. There's going to be blogs. There's pointers to the IE blog. There's pointers to the test drive site where you can actually see a lot of the new stuff that's coming in IE. So that's just a way to link out and get into that community piece. All right. Now, I should go back to here. Did I hit the right one? I did. All right. So that was just, like I said in the beginning, that's a fast meet and greet, right? Just a quick overview. There's a whole bunch of talks coming that drill down really deep into the pieces that actually have some more complex applications that we can look at. There we go. So presentation. So what we saw initially, I guess I should have interleaved. if you go back to where the first one was, we had the live DOM visualization. If I change things in the DOM viewer, they change both in the styles, they change down in the consoles, they changed up in the browser itself. We were able to go through, oh, you know what, I didn't show that. That's okay. We were able to go through, this is great notes. I should have looked at these. Let's go back to any of these classes. If you look, I need my old man eyes again. All right, let's look at this guy. Because there's more there. All right. Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you. I'm so used to being here. The styles, accurate reporting of styles. This actually bears really calling out, because there's a couple things here that are definitely new from the previous tools. Oh, I do have a laser pointer. If you notice, there's actually like essentially spell checking, error checking going on in here. So you can see like here is font weight, and it's misspelled. Right, and so we can go in and actually fix that using, and there will be full, let's see, font. Oh, look, there's IntelliSense. That's cool. Everywhere I'm editing, we have IntelliSense. So I can come down here to font weight. All right, cool. I'm happy with that. We also have things like misspellings, color instead of color. Right. We have, where's the other one? If there's things are specified multiple times, they get pulled out. Also, things like the WebKit, if you have any specific prefixes on there. The reason this is worth calling out is actually, it's what you expect. Right? If these things were in the style sheet, they were in the rules, we're going to be showing you what's there. This is actually quite a bit different than what we had before. And the problem that we had was that when we parsed our styles, we put it into an internal canonicalized format. And that parsing process actually threw out anything it didn't recognize. right? So, you know, they would be treated essentially as expandos in the rule, and we just threw them out. If there was duplicates, we would take, you know, the first one wins, we would throw out all the rest. If there was illegal values, they couldn't canonicalize, right? We couldn't get that internal format that was optimized for cascading. We'd throw them out. And so all we were able to previously report here was the things that made it through all those parser rules. And so we had to do a bunch of work in the parser to be able to record all of the things that it saw, as it saw it, what the values were, as well as being able to show that it doesn't apply, you know, because it's not recognized, as well as being able to keep the line and column information from the original so that when you just click on it, we go straight to the source, right? So you can figure out what's going on there, right? And we can edit it all here and it will live update and show. So, and we had to do that in a way that didn't affect perf, right? Because you don't know if the tools are going to be applied or not, if someone's going to bring up or not. So we had to keep track of all that information and not increase memory, not cause a perf hit, right? For the standard scenario where users don't use F12. And so we had to do a whole bunch of perf work in order to buy this feature. So actually, I like this feature. But it does, it gives you what you want, what you actually get specified. And so we had accurate reporting of selector styles, media queries, yep, error handling. And then we were able to have all the auto-completion, source navigation to get back exactly where they were, especially when you get into these really large style sheets. Being able to jump straight to that rule and be able to modify those things is extremely time beneficial for your time. Okay, then we went into debugging a functional issue. So this was always on, again, no perf impact. So we didn't have to refresh. We didn't have to switch the script engine into a debugging mode. We were able to attach, be able to run down through all of the global objects without there being any kind of perf impact on that. Especially if you're trying to deal with timing issues, you don't want to have the Heisenberg effect where watching it changes the timing significantly that you can't debug it. So we were able to address a lot of that. The UI, I didn't show a lot about the difference between the locals, watches, and call stacks, and especially the interaction with the console. I kind of glossed over the console. There's a huge amount of functionality there that I didn't show. So I highly recommend that if you're interested in like the debugging piece, go to that talk. They get a lot more in-depth. But the idea here was to very quickly be able to see all of the information that's relevant, manage your breakpoints, manage your watches in the way that you'd expect. Okay, rich editor, pretty printing. Oh, and the search markers. So there's search markers along the side. No problem. See, powerful console, blah, blah. Yeah, blah. I get it. I saw it. diagnosing responsiveness. All right, so this is where we got into the UI responsiveness, a little bit of script profiling. Again, having that timeline that visually shows you which subsystems was the time spent in, being able to actually hover over and see the script that was executing, being able to see the causality and get back to the element that had the property set on it, being able to look at these patterns, having automatic markers in there. You can also do, I think, you can say console dot and put marks in so that you can actually mark places that you care about. And again, there's going to be a whole talk that drills down into really how do you use this tool. I've only scratched the surface on all of these. All right, historical graphs, CPU utilization, you saw that even earlier today. I did not go into any frame rate debugging in this. Again, there's a whole other aspect of the tool specifically around that. Memory usage. So you saw that we were able to take memory snapshots. They happened fairly quick. We were able to automatically be able to see diffs between the snapshots to find out what new objects had been allocated. We were able to see which object back in the source was the thing that maybe the time was being spent on. Like in this case, I had the image with the source URL, so I was able to find, I knew exactly which object that was going to be, and I was able to go back and look at that. So we're able to do a good job for the causality matching there. And then even at the end, I found that the memory worked the way I kind of expected it to, right? As I was searching and hiding and showing things, I wasn't creating a huge number of new objects. I was just hiding and showing ones that already existed, right? And so I was kind of in a steady state of memory no matter how many times I searched or what different filters I used on. So that validated my expectations. Whereas the first time, I really didn't expect to see an image that was 10 times bigger than everything else. All right. So, wow, that was fast. Now we're to the summary. So again, what we really tried to do was we tried to look, we redid the tools from the ground up, right? They were written in TypeScript. It's, I don't know, 250,000 lines at this point. It's still going. This is just a preview. We're still making fixes. I've got a team back there making fixes and adding functionality, you know, even this week. So it's just getting better and better. We really recognize that the platform without the tools just is not as usable. You cannot get as much done. And the kinds of applications that are coming, right, that you're trying to build today need the more sophisticated tools, right? The performance improvements alone allow us to build stuff that's more complicated, not to mention all of the new modules and stuff. So we really are looking at this as just this ongoing investment that has to be paired with the platform improvements. All right. And then because, you know, time is limited, we recognize that there's specific tasks that you do all the time or that are very difficult to do if you don't have visibility into the underlying systems. All right. And so we optimize this initial set of tools around those tasks and those sets of information. There's so much more that we can do. There's so many more tools we would love to add in. And, you know, we're going to be doing that. You know, some of it's based on priority and how critical is that tool to that scenario. Right. And so modern app challenges are easier. Yeah, we know that. Okay, so related talks. These are all coming. A bunch of them are later today. There's a whole bunch tomorrow. If you're interested in any of these, you know, any of these areas, please make sure to go see these talks. We have people over in the office hours booths, over in the big hall. We have people over in the Microsoft section. I can stick around to answer any questions and go down as deep as you're interested in here. I've been on IE building the platform for a very long time, so if it's a question about the internals, I probably know it. And with that, I give you those new F12 tools. All right. Thank you.